Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand, Katie Weaver, Anne Ball, and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Susan Shand.
North Korea again launched ballistic missiles into the sea early Tuesday. The action appeared to be in answer to military exercises involving the United States and South Korea that begin this week. North Korea expressed anger, warning it may take a new road because of the exercises. In a statement, South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff said North Korea fired two short-range ballistic missiles from the western part of the country. The missiles are reported to have traveled about 450 kilometers. North Korea has launched short-range ballistic missiles four times in less than 2 weeks. The actions have raised concerns about the possibility of lower-level talks on ending the country's nuclear weapons program. U.S. officials had hoped those talks would begin last month, but so far a date has not been set. Minutes before the latest test, North Korea's foreign ministry released a statement condemning the military exercises. The statement said the exercises were a flagrant violation of its recent agreements with the United States and South Korea. We have already warned several times that the joint military exercises would block progress and bring us into reconsideration of our earlier major steps, said a North Korean Foreign Ministry spokesperson. The statement was reported by the official Korean Central News Agency. KCNA also reported that the Foreign Ministry spokesman said North Korea may seek a new road, as it has already indicated. The U.S. and South Korea on Monday moved ahead with the joint exercises, which they say are defensive in nature. At the same time, the two nations asked North Korea to attend lower-level nuclear talks. In an email to VOA, a U.S. Forces Korea spokesman said the U.S. military will continue training with South Korean forces. He refused to discuss the military exercises, saying he wanted to leave room for diplomacy to work. The U.S. and South Korea have reduced or canceled several planned military exercises since last year. The changes are part of an agreement reached between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. A top U.S. defense official spoke to reporters on a military aircraft flying to Tokyo. He said the U.S. would like to see North Korea reduce or cancel some of its military exercises. Some experts, however, say North Korea appears to have no plans to do so. So they are going to continue their winter training exercises, and yet they want us to completely end ours asks Bradley Bowman of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. A spokesperson for South Korea's presidential office said an emergency meeting was called to discuss the latest North Korean launch. Speaking in Tokyo Tuesday, U.S. Secretary of Defense Mark Esper said the U.S. takes the launchings seriously. "We monitor them. We try to understand what they're doing and why. We also need to be careful not to overreact and not to get ourselves in a situation where diplomacy is closed off," he said. Intelligence officials say the weapons North Korea launched Tuesday appear similar to the short-range ballistic missiles tested on July 25th, said South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff. North Korea, on July 25th, launched its version of a Russian-made Iskander short-range ballistic missile. It appears to be designed to overcome U.S. and South Korean missile defenses. Since then, North Korea has also tested a new multiple rocket launcher. Because the missiles traveled a distance of 450 kilometers, it means that all of South Korean territory is within firing range, says Kim Dong-yub. He is a North Korean expert at Seoul's Institute for Far Eastern Studies. Trump has said he has no problem with North Korea's recent missile launches because they are short range. He wants to continue talks with North Korea. In a series of tweets last week, the president said the missile tests are not a violation of our signed Singapore agreement, nor was there discussion of short-range missiles. I'm Susan Shand.
I lost my childhood. I loved school and going to school, but they wouldn't let me. Those are the words of young Afghan Somaya. She was speaking about her husband and mother-in-law, new relations of hers at the time. Somaya's father, Aminullah, sold his daughter into marriage when she was 13. She had been attending seventh grade in Herat, where she lived with her family. But marriage changed that. In exchange for Somaya's union, Aminullah received about $3,300 from the family of her future husband. The girl begged her new husband and his relatives to permit her to return to school. Somaya said, "They wouldn't let me. They shouted at her and beat her." Finally, after months of struggle, Somaya was permitted to legally separate from her husband. Now she lives only with her mother and brother. Her father is in prison. "My father never worked," she said. "My life is better, especially now that my father is not here." Somaya and her mother sew clothes to make money. She says they keep their prices low, so they get many customers. And now the two seamstresses control the money they earn. Somaya said, "My father used to fight with us and take the money we'd earned by sewing. I had a lot of problems in the past." Hers is a relatively happy outcome to early marriage, which UNICEF says can limit the education, health, and well-being of girls, and the economic condition of their countries. Afghanistan's legal lowest age for marriage is 16. In 2017, the Afghan central government launched an action plan against child marriage. Public education and economic empowerment play important parts in reducing the practice, said Dr. Seema Samar. She headed the Afghan Independent Human Rights Commission. She told VOA in an email that if the commission gets a report about child marriage, then we can intervene through officials. Research suggests the Afghan public's support for early marriage is decreasing, even in poor rural areas such as Bamiyan Province, says Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland. Researchers at the university's Bloomberg School of Public Health questioned almost 1,000 12 to 15-year-old Afghans and about 500 parents in several provinces. 75% of those youths were still in school and unmarried. All but 10% of the parents said children should complete secondary school. Another 40% said marriage should not take place until after that goal is reached. Robert Blum led the research. He told VOA, "Attitude shift does not in and of itself mean behavior change." But, he added, "This is really a sea change for a country in one generation." Somaya has not returned to public education. "At the moment, I haven't decided whether to go back to school," she said. But she is learning and has plans. Somaya said, "I'm getting tutored in reading the Quran. I plan to tutor students myself once I finish." I'm Katie Weaver.
Tanasia Johnson has experienced sad events and a lot of pressure in her young life. 2 years ago, when Tanasia joined a sixth grade class at a new school, she was mourning the death of her mother. Her father had been in and out of jail. Tanasia witnessed violence near her home in Baltimore, Maryland. She also felt pressure to help her grandparents raise her younger siblings. Now, daily life is still difficult, but after spending 2 years at a new trauma-sensitive school, she is learning how to control the effects of pressure and sorrow. Together, these feelings had made her brain feel like a racing engine.
Tanasia said she used to always be fighting and arguing with people. "But this last year, I've been doing a lot better because I've been learning how to control my anger in a lot of ways and think positive thoughts to get me through," she noted. The teenager spoke with the Associated Press at her school, New Song Community Learning Center in West Baltimore. It is open around the year, unlike most schools in the United States. Tanasia says the school has become her sanctuary from streets where the names of young gun violence victims are painted on the walls. Recently, Baltimore's school system held a ceremony to recognize the students who were gunned down this school year.
In Baltimore and other U.S. cities with high crime, school officials are realizing that long-lasting trauma in childhood affects brain development. It can create the risk of physical and behavioral health problems in the future when the children become adults. School officials have reacted by setting up the trauma-sensitive schools, both in big cities such as Chicago and San Francisco, and states such as Iowa and Wisconsin. Baltimore's problems made national headlines last month when U.S. President Donald Trump criticized the area where Tanasia Johnson lives. Her neighborhood is part of a congressional district served by Elijah Cummings.
Trump tweeted that Cummings' majority black district is a disgusting rat and rodent-infested mess where no human being would want to live. Trump's opponents criticized his comments. They blamed the president for not doing more to help Baltimore. The trauma-sensitive schools are made possible in part with money from the federal government. The schools can help only some of those who need it. With the help of $2.3 million in federal money in 2016, officials have turned 13 public schools in West Baltimore into trauma-sensitive schools. Students there have access to full-time mental health workers, mindfulness and breathing exercises, and peace corners where they can go and calm down. School officials have reached out into the community to get to know the people raising the children.
The federal financing of trauma-sensitive schools ends this year. Officials are using the remaining money to teach everyone, from teachers and administrators to food workers, how to recognize and help traumatized students. Experts from Baltimore-based Johns Hopkins University and the University of Maryland are also providing services. The school district will have a full-time social worker in all schools for the upcoming school year. The city also has created calming spaces and wholeness places for students in schools that are not official trauma-sensitive centers.
Patrick Sharkey is a sociologist at Princeton University in New Jersey. He said many children go to school carrying the weight of violence with them, and that harms their ability to get a good night's sleep and think clearly. Programs like those in Baltimore can help, he said. He added it is important to recognize the most effective way to improve school performance is to deal with the problem of community violence. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Ann Ball.
On our national parks journey, we travel to the northwestern state of Oregon. Here, you will find a huge, deep lake. Its waters seem impossibly blue. It is the deepest lake in America and one of the deepest lakes in the world. Its water is among the clearest and purest found on Earth. Around the lake runs the wall of an extinct volcano. In the middle of the lake, a small island rises over 230 meters above the surface. Welcome to Crater Lake National Park.
The lake's beauty inspires artists, photographers, and nature lovers. That beauty was born from the violent burst of Mount Mazama about 7,700 years ago. Hot liquid called magma rose from deep under the mountain, causing it to collapse. The powerful burst destroyed the surrounding area. Huge amounts of ash fell on the land. The burst also left an enormous circular hole in the mountain's center. Scientists call this a caldera. Over the next hundreds of years, rain and snow filled the hole with water. Rainfall and snowfall are the lake's only source of water. It has no connections to the rivers and streams around it. That is what keeps its waters so pure. As water collected, plants began to grow in the area again, and animals returned. Scientists say it took about 250 years for the lake to rise to its current water level. Crater Lake is 592 meters deep. It is one of the 10 deepest on Earth. But its depth is not the only remarkable quality. People are awed by its water color and clarity. Crater Lake is so clear that on most days you can see nearly 30 meters below the surface. The lake takes on its intense blue color because of the water's clarity. Sunlight reaches deep into the water. Crater Lake gets its name from geology. A crater is a large, bowl-shaped area on top of a volcano. The crater that formed the lake sits within the larger caldera.
Native Americans were in the area even before the lake's formation. Researchers have found artifacts buried under layers of ash and dust from Mount Mazama's huge eruption. Following the burst, Native Americans considered Crater Lake to be a holy place. Ancient Native American stories describe the eruption of Mount Mazama. European explorers and settlers did not arrive in the area until the middle 1800s. In 1865, a hunter became one of the first non-Native Americans to reach the shores of Crater Lake. In 1870, a boy in Kansas read a newspaper article about the strange lake in Oregon. The story about Crater Lake fascinated the young William Gladstone Steele. He promised himself he would one day see this lake. In 1872, Steele's family moved to Portland, Oregon, about 375 kilometers north of the lake. 13 years later, Steele honored his promise and visited Crater Lake. Its beauty moved him greatly. He began a 17-year fight to preserve the area as a public park. Steele was a writer. He described one of his first visits to Crater Lake in 1886 in the West Shore magazine.
Not a foot of the land about the lake has been touched or claimed. An overmastering conviction came to me that this wonderful spot must be saved, wild and beautiful, just as it was, for all future generations.
His proposal of creating a national park did not please nearby sheep herders and miners. But his efforts succeeded anyway. On May 22, 1902, Crater Lake became the country's fifth national park. It remains the only national park in Oregon. And William Gladstone Steele is called the father of Crater Lake.
Crater Lake National Park covers 740 square kilometers. The lake itself makes up less than 10% of the park. It also includes surrounding mountains and thick forests. The trees shelter many kinds of animals, from black bears to elk to spotted owls. About 480,000 people visit Crater Lake National Park each year. They explore by car, bicycle, or on foot. Roads that encircle Crater Lake usually are open from July through October, depending on weather. They provide breathtaking displays of the lake's unusual blue color, as well as the forests around it. Crater Lake National Park also has more than 140 kilometers of hiking trails. The Cleetwood Cove Trail drops more than 200 meters down to the edge of Crater Lake. It leads to a spot where swimming is permitted. The water is extremely cold. Most swimmers cannot stay in for more than a few minutes. Crater Lake's average water temperature is just 3 degrees Celsius. In summer, the lake's surface warms to about 10 degrees Celsius.
Visitors can also catch a boat from the end of Cleetwood Cove Trail. Park rangers lead visitors on boat rides around the lake. Visitors can also take boats to Wizard Island. The piece of land sits in the western part of the lake. Volcanic eruptions formed Wizard Island. It rises over 760 meters above the lake floor. However, most of the island, about 500 meters, is underwater. At Wizard Island, visitors can hike, swim, and fish. It is also a wonderful place to relax and enjoy nature. But such extraordinary places can be found all over the park. Discovering one's own is part of the magic to experience at Crater Lake National Park.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.